B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help you rate it.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, hi everybody. Welcome to the program, Felger and Maserati. Wednesday, June 24th. Felger here in the A-hole chair from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Big Jim Murray alongside.
Hello.
Anthony. Hi, Jim. How you doing, man?
Good.
Anthony Maserati on location. Hi, Tony.
Good, you?
Peachy, thank you so much. I want to start off today's program, if you all don't mind, unless you have something more pressing. Just to follow up on our Tom Brady conversation yesterday. We spent a lot of time on it, so I don't intend for it to dominate the day like it did yesterday, but I did just want to follow up and I did just want to clarify something, Maz, because I think a lot of our Tom Brady commentary can be construed and maybe correctly as Tom Brady bashing, would you not say? Would you not
Yes.
say we do some Brady bashing?
Occasionally.
And I think that extended to yesterday when, again, despite the pandemic, despite the warnings from public health officials, his union, despite teammates and coaches on his team and in his organization testing positive for COVID, just hours, days after these warnings come out and his coach releases a PSA, be careful, keep your distance, he's out there practicing in Tampa. And despite all of that, he's still leading these team practices out in Tampa. And we spent a lot of time on it yesterday. And again, I think just the general tone is that of like we're bashing Brady. The fact is, I love the fact that he's out there. I love it. I think it looks that to me is Tom Brady at my most favorite. Like that is the Tom Brady that I know and love. And that gets me off. It gets me off as a sports fan. It gets me off as a Tom Brady fan, which ultimately I am, you know, despite all the banter. And I love it. I think it's great. The frustration, Maz, is that he did not do that here the last couple of years. And you know, not only did he not do it here, the fans excused him for not doing it here. He blamed his family or his family situation. They bought it. Like, that whole storyline aggravates me. But getting lost in the fact is that I freaking love the fact that he's out there busting his ass in June, no excuses, because he's hyper-motivated and obsessed with his sport, his craft, his job, winning games, etc. Now, I just want to make that clear. And there's a couple things that drove that home, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if you have a thought on that. To me, I mean, I just want to make that clear. I love the fact that he's out there. I think it's badass.
So, look, I'll just tell you what I thought from the very beginning, going back to the beginning of the season when I thought they were headed towards a breakup and a separation, and they being Belichick and Brady, that when this thing finally happened and they parted ways, I thought it was going to be good for both of them. I thought it was going to be good for the Patriots. I thought it was going to be good for Brady. I still think it was a hard thing for everybody to accept, given the relationship and the success that they had over a period of time. But this is precisely why it was good for Brady, because he needed a new challenge. He was sick of the coach. He was sick of New England, not necessarily to the same degree, but he was sick of the whole vibe. And much of it was the result of Belichick. So moving somewhere else, he was going to get recharged by this. Hey, Mike, whether it was Tampa or anywhere else, as long as it wasn't New England and it wasn't Bill, Brady was going to be dialing it in again, and that's what he's doing.
So, the negative tone is the frustration of what happened here, why he wasn't doing this here, and the excuses he made for not doing it here, and you excusing him not doing it here. That's my frustration. The fact that he's out there, I love, again, I think is badass. But if you think that he's irresponsible for gathering despite, you know, the times and the spike in Florida and the advisories against gathering with his teammates, the positive test, if you think if it's bad form for that, you know, I want to hear from you. If you think that it's bad form that he sends out that Instagram gallery, and in the Instagram gallery, what it really is an advertisement for his
protect.
Right, his immunity supplements. If you think that's bad for you, think that's bad for Murray?
I mean, this is just part and parcel of following Tom Brady on social media now. You're always going to get an ad for something. Right now, he's really trying to shove that Protect down everyone's throats, and I think it's bad form, and that I do think he's still trying to take advantage of the horrible situation of the pandemic. You know, I'm all for anyone trying to make a buck, but this one was just, I think it's distasteful. I said it at the time, it's no different to me than those that try to take advantage of a hurricane-ravaged area when you go down and you try to sell a generator for double the money. You know, it's just, it's profiteering is what it is.
Okay.
I mean, for him to link the two is wrong. I'm sorry. For him to link the two is wrong. And to use it as some sort of, you know, avenue or vehicle to promote his own product, I think now that irritates the crap out of me. I don't like that either. How about just I take care of myself, but more importantly, I'm out here to play football. Let's play football. I want to get ready. I don't hold it against him that he's geeked up and locked in and focused in Tampa Bay. To me, all the stuff yesterday was a criticism of the way the final 2 years went here.
Okay.
I have felt that all criticism of Brady was about the final 2 years here. It's not about the way he's approaching his new beginning in Tampa Bay.
If you want to get on him for any of those things, you can. If you can release the hounds, Jimmy at 617-779-0985. I'm just reminded of Brady, and I think the juxtaposition is made clear when I read a story like this in The Athletic. Headline, no basketball? No problem. During hiatus, Jason Tatum thriving at golf. And this is a story, and I've alluded to this a couple different times on the air, so I'm glad someone reported it. I've heard that Jason Tatum is golfing his face off and that he's been going to practice facilities, specifically CORE in Natick, which is a place you all should check out. Fine sponsor here on the program, one of the finest driving ranges you'll ever see. It's really a
place is the balls, no pun intended.
Thank you. It's a high end practice facility. But I heard that he's been there a ton, and this is the same guy that went 2 months without touching a basketball and couldn't find a basketball hoop, but he's finding time to improve his golf game. And you know, I mean, when I read the story, it's like, holy crap! In The Athletic, the story says Tatum is picking up the game quickly, meaning the game of golf. Just 3 years ago, before his rookie season, he was filmed whiffing on a swing at Topgolf. Now, says instructor Daniel Boisvert, the Celtics all-star is making rapid progress during regular lessons. Though he rarely swung a golf club before the NBA shutdown in March, Tatum developed the itch during the league hiatus and has been working diligently on his game since. He's been working diligently on his golf game since. When it comes to basketball, he couldn't find a basketball or a rim. They had to bring a hoop out to his house so he could shoot baskets. But he's found time to go practice his golf game. He's been working diligently on his golf game. Since Tatum returned to the Boston area, Boisvert, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, Boisvert said that he has worked on his star pupil swing approximately at 10 lessons. At the CORE Golf Center in Natick, Boisvert will set aside one section of the facility so Tatum can have a little bit of privacy from fans. The two will spend about an hour per session working on swings and a bit more time on drivers and short game work. Tatum is still in the beginning stages of building a lasting swing, but already shows rare natural talent. In a video Boisvert posted to Instagram, he claimed that Tatum hit a bunt driver 315 yards. What does that mean, Maz?
No idea.
Boisvert said Tatum has already eclipsed the average swing speed of PGA Tour players, about 114 miles an hour. Again, his coach says Tatum has already eclipsed the average swing speed of PGA Tour players.
I would hope so.
He makes half swings at 118, Boisvert said. But with a wingspan and the physics of it, he's got a very, very long lever to create speed for him. So it doesn't even look like he's swinging, and he's swinging 118 miles an hour. So he's well ahead of the PGA Tour average without even really going at it.
Okay. I mean, it's tough enough at 6'4". It's 6'8". What kind of sticks is that kid using?
Dot, 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 dot. He's working his ass off on his golf game.
It's annoying. I was annoyed at the time that he hadn't picked up a basketball. I was annoyed yesterday hearing that sound from Tuukka Rask where he just shrugs and is like, oh, I guess I should start skating here eventually. I know there's a lot of hours in the day, and you can spend some time trying to get better at golf, but I've yet to really hear anything in regard to Jason Tatum practicing, being at the Auerbach Center, doing anything.
So he's not the only one. Again, Rask is a good one. I mentioned this yesterday. You know, Rask is asked what's next, and he says, oh, well, I guess it's time to start skating. You know, he's been off skates for 3 months, and he said the only exercise he's been getting is on the golf course. He's been getting his exercise on the golf course, and it's like, oh, my God, You know whose golf game has gone to crap? Tom Brady's. Gone to absolute garbage. You know why? Because he's not wasting his time with golf. He's getting ready for the season. And that's all I want to hear from these guys. And it bothers me every time I hear Maz, a pro athlete, not treating it like Tom Brady. And to me, this is just a piece that people miss. And, you know, I think it was Cameron Taunton yesterday asked me, you know, Felger, you really think that Brady practicing in May is the reason he's Tom Brady and that's been the key to their success? And I'll just say it again. Yes. Yes, I do. I think it's the work ethic, the commitment. I think that's what separates everybody because these are all incredibly talented guys, incredibly skilled guys. Who's obsessed? Who's committed? Who's putting in the extra work and who isn't? I think that's what makes the difference. Michael Jordan was the most talented player ever. He also worked his balls off and was obsessed until he got to the end and then, you know, maybe got a little loose. But for the most part, to get to where he was, it was this maniacal commitment. And so, yes, that is what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady. That's what makes the greats great. And I'm stunned that these athletes, Maz, get to that stage and they have, you know, varying degrees of that commitment. It bothers me when I hear it. It bothers me when I hear
okay,
it.
So,
I don't want to hear about Jason Tatum's commitment to his golf game. I want to hear about his commitment to basketball. I want to hear this story with his private shooting coach and the massive hours and the strides he's made on the floor. And I don't want to hear about Ras getting his work in on the golf course. I want to hear about all the things he's doing to get better at hockey. I don't care about your freaking golf game. And then so that sort of bugs. And it all sort of circles back to while the Brady, you know, narrative and discussion point bugs me that he wasn't this guy the last couple of years. That's what I want, and that's why Brady's Brady. And that's all. That, you know, that's my point. That's what I wanted to clarify from yesterday, Maz.
Okay, so my only point on Tatum is, so he's out at the range, which, again, I sort of separate the two. Is your issue that he's out playing golf or that he's not playing basketball?
I think he's golfing more than he's basketballing.
Okay, so again, so it's more about the basketball than if he was sitting on his sofa watching TV instead of playing the basketball, would you be mad at him sitting on the sofa?
Yep.
So it's about the basketball.
It's about your obsession should be basketball. Your obsession
right.
should not
so
be
this
golf.
Is, so
or
this
your...
is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. It doesn't matter what the other thing is. If he's putting in his work on basketball, you don't care.
And he's not. So, I mean, when they asked him in the middle of the thing, he said, I haven't touched a basketball in 2 months. I don't even have a rim. The seltzer, someone had to run a basket out to him. Like, come on. I don't want to hear that. I'm sorry, Maz. I'm not yelling at you.
No. Listen, I get it. I understand. I'm just telling you that it's the absence of the focus on the singular sport that you're talking or the profession that is really what you're talking about, independent of whether it's golf or TV or anything else, is the guy fully committed. The whole thing with the basketball hoop with Tatum, I don't get. I don't get how a guy who's an NBA player is in the middle of a pandemic, all the talk about a league coming back, and he doesn't have a basketball hoop to shoot in the driveway, and I do. Like I don't get that. That makes no sense to me.
So
zero.
Tuukka Rask is getting his work in on the golf course, he says. Tatum is obsessed and committed and putting in big hours and practice time on the golf range. Meanwhile, guess whose golf game has gone to crap? Brady. Because he's obsessed with football. He's obsessed with getting back on the field and his sport. And that's what I want from all these guys. And again, I think it's a badass story that Brady's, you know, pushing through and practicing through all this. Do you think it's inappropriate for him? And again, I want to hear if you think that it's irresponsible given the times and given the pandemic, or if, you know, the continue to push the supplements as well. You can weigh in on that or just that whole take. All right. So again, we're not going to spend all day on Brady like we did yesterday, but if you just want to follow up, now's your time at 617-779-0985.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mass.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mass.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
So I don't buy into this thing that, like, Jordan leaves the Bulls and everybody goes, man, they're so dysfunctional. No, they're not. The Bulls are what they always were. Pre-Jordan and post-Jordan. It's the same team. Mess. New England, post-Tom Brady, never going to be the same. So when you hear a lot of this, I cannot wait to prove we did not need Tom Brady. Eye roll. Julian Edelman is all kinds of pumped up to prove the Patriot doubters wrong. According to reports, direct quote, he hates excuses. He's not just a product of Brady. Okay, I would like to deliver some facts here. Julian Edelman has never made a Pro Bowl. He led the NFL in drops last year. 3 seasons total in his career where he didn't miss games to injuries. And he has 36 career touchdowns. Randy Moss had over half that in 1 year with Brady. Julian Edelman is not even Wes Welker. Wes Welker was a Pro Bowler 5 times, All Pro once, 5,000-yard seasons, and outside of 1 year, 1 year in New England, he got hurt. That's about it. New England, you got to get used to something. You're the Bulls. You're the Bulls pre-Jordan and the Bulls post-Jordan. Yeah, that's what New England is. Bill Belichick didn't win in Cleveland. He wasn't winning in New England. Brady is the franchise.
That's not totally on topic, but just curious, do you guys agree or disagree? Are the Pats the Bulls?
Yeah, no. I want to kiss them for this. They're not going to be as bad as what the Bulls turned into, but, I mean, Brady was the star. Brady, I think, was really one of the main reasons they were putting a lot of asses in seats here for the most part of the last decade or so, or definitely in the last two. Well, not the two, but the last 10 for sure. It's been more Brady, I think, than anything else over the last decade.
But
I mean, so again, to say they were the Bulls and the Bulls were a mess, the Bulls were a laughingstock. Were the Patriots a complete mess and a complete laughingstock before Brady got here?
No.
My answer is no. So Parcells changed some of that, and then even under Pete, and you know, it got worse, but their final year, they were 8-8. I think they went 10-6, 9-7, 8-8 under Pete Carroll.
Well, and the Crafts, and the Crafts, you know, brought a level of competence, you know, in absolutely ownership, which, you know, certainly they did not have with the clown show Victor Kiam and the Sullivans. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it ran out under that. So I think they weren't quite the Bulls when Brady took over. But that rough analogy, do you fear that that's what we're looking at? That they were one thing before Brady, and they'll go right back to it after Brady.
Do I fear it? Sure. Yeah, sure I fear it. I have too much respect for pro sports to know how it works. So, you know, if you were to say to me that they could go 20 years now without winning a title, is that possible or more? Sure. Hell yeah, it's possible. Of course it's possible. We're going to see what the heck happens here. So do I fear it? Yes. Do I think under Bill they're going to turn into what the Bulls turned into under Jordan? And the first 6 years, 5 or 6 years without Jordan in Chicago, they were a train wreck. I think they averaged like about 20 wins a year, a little over that maybe. They were awful. And I don't think the Patriots are going to be awful.
Okay, I have more faith in Belichick for sure, and the Crafts to some degree as well, than Jerry Reinsdorf and whatever was left there in Chicago. Also a different sport, of course. Not singularly dependent on that one guy. But as a rough analogy, do you fear that? I just thought that was an interesting take. All right, to your phones, as promised. Mike in Hyde Park. Go ahead, Mike. Lead us off.
Yeah, I just want to say, as like a longtime Patriots fan, this year I just find it going to be way more exciting to watch Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, they have Brady's down there. I think he's going to be more vocal in the press conferences. He has a more exciting offense. He's already practicing. I think there's going to be no fans, no crowd, which is going to be a huge advantage to him. I think it's just going to be a lot more exciting this year. I already ordered my jersey, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, babe.
We're talking about Brady still right now more than we are the Patriots.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'll talk about him every day. It's a fascinating story, and he is. He is going to be more interesting down there. He's already more interesting down there. Not that he's turned into like Ray Lewis at the interview podium or anything, but he's given you more, and he's going to continue to give you more. And that offense is going to be fun to watch. And the whole, you know, something to prove against Belichick is already fun to watch. So, yeah, it's a terrific story. Terrific. Matt in Framingham. Go ahead, Matt.
So I'll tell you what I think, guys, the reasoning behind Jason Tatum all of a sudden become obsessing with golf. I think we all remember that report that came out about Tatum having second thoughts about playing once the NBA resumed. Well, I'm not completely buying that story. I think what's happening with Tatum is success has gotten to his head. And that's a concern that I have with a lot of these young basketball players. They start thinking they're all bad. So if I'm Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens, I'm getting a little bit of an antenna up because of that.
You know, a little bit, right? I mean, I don't mean to overplay it. It's not that it doesn't make him the worst person in the world or a bad pro that he's taking up golf. Like, I don't want to overstate it. Yeah, it sounds like I am. But I'm just telling you, maybe he looks at the fact that Jordan was a big golfer and golfed day of game all the time, or Steph Curry's a scratch golfer, or Ray Allen's a great golfer. You know, there's been a lot of great golfers as NBA players. Danny Ainge and Bird golfed a ton, you know, da-da-da-da-da. I just like to see him win something first and then take up golf. It's like, no, like you should have a singular obsession right now. Your singular obsession should be winning a championship and establishing yourself as one of the best players in the game. And once you do that, golf, play video games, tiddlywinks, do whatever you got to do. But you got to get there first.
I don't expect everyone to be on the level of Brady and Jordan, but I just haven't heard much from certain guys like Tatum actually putting in much effort to get back to starting their season and practicing their craft. It seems like it's more practicing golf than anything else, and that's annoying.
It is. He's been out there. He's been at the Auerbach Center. We have video of it. Like, he was one of the first guys back, or at least they showed us. I mean, this is the problem with not having the media there. You don't know who's showing up when, and it's all what the team feeds you. This is another side topic that bugs me. We need, you know, real coverage and real reporters there. But either way, I'm not telling you he's not doing anything basketball-wise. It just, I found it aggravating when I read during the middle of the shutdown that he hadn't touched a basketball, doesn't even have a rim. But then I read he's at CORE, you know, which you all should go to, great facility, but he's at CORE all this time, and he's pounding out golf balls and working like a maniac on his golf game. That's not what I want. Win a championship, establish yourself, and then if you want to go play golf like everybody else, fine. I'm sort of a stickler like that. I guess I'm sort of old school like that. David Stoneham.
So, but wait a minute. If he never wins a championship, then he can never play?
I mean, I just don't want to hear it. Yeah, I mean, kind of. That's the way I feel. Like,
yeah, Mike, come on. There's a line there, and the issue is that you don't feel like he commits enough time to his trade. It's really not about the golf. And again, change the golf to ping pong. Change it to whatever you want. It's all I care. You question whether or not he's really committed to his craft.
I guess, yes. I mean, golf's a different animal, Maz, in that it is a huge time commitment. You know, it's the thing about golf is time. And it's just, but you're right, it could be anything. If I heard that he was out there, you know, right, fine, taking ping pong lessons.
I mean, video games are time consuming. If he's doing that, same thing.
They certainly are. Yes, you're right. So it could be anything. I just don't like that optic. And maybe it's only that. Maybe it's just an optic. It's just a look. It's just a feel. But I want these guys obsessed with their sport. Dave and Stoneham. Go ahead, Dave.
So I'm a bad fan, fair weather fan. I love what Brady's doing in Tampa Bay, and I hope they go 19-0 down there. I am not a Pats fan until Jarrett Stidham somehow turns into Tom Brady. I cannot wait to see how this plays out.
So hold on. You're not a
Patriots.
Dave, you're not a Pats fan unless Jarrett Stidham turns into Tom Brady.
I'm pretty much.
Then you're not a fan.
Fairweather fan. I'm going to root for Tampa Bay because of Brady as much or more than I am for the Patriots right now.
Okay.
At least he's
all
honest.
Team Brady. This is crap that they let him go.
Okay, babe. Well, at least you're admitting it. Now, the Fairweather fandom and spite fandom are different. So I think spite fandom is a sign of passion. Like Murray is a big Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan because he's so passionate about the Patriots and Brady, and he's so pissed off that he's going to, you know, out of spite, root for the Buccaneers.
Yeah, because it shouldn't have come to this, and he got pushed out by Bill.
So that's not fair weather fandom. That's spite fandom. That's like, so I don't, but I'm more worried about the pink hat guy. It's like, oh, Brady's gone? Yeah, maybe I'll watch, maybe I won't. Like that guy, you're not really a fan. But the spite fandom is different. We will continue this conversation. Here's Murray's update. First, we also want to update you on the Bubba Wallace thing that broke late in yesterday's show. We'll do that right after, again, the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Wilder and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, the 5 o'clock hour. Yesterday's show, the news broke that the FBI has concluded its investigation into the news situation down at Talladega this weekend. Concluded no hate crime. It was a garage pull-down that had been there and in that spot since October of 2019. And so that was that. And 24 hours later, any reaction to it? Anything aggravate you about the situation? Anyone to blame? You know, we like to blame people or get on people. So what's... I mean, I do find the whole thing aggravating, but what do you find most aggravating? Maz, we'll start with you.
Well, so to me, it's the response now that somehow people are treating this like it was some sort of hoax, and it wasn't a hoax. It was, call it whatever you want, a misinterpretation or something like that, but the noose was there. They thought someone did it more recently, and in fact, the noose had been there for some time. So again, the fact that people are treating it like a hoax to me blows me away. So, okay, so what, the fact that it was there a long time means what, that racism doesn't exist? Like, I'm having trouble drawing the connection that people are trying to make with the whole, yeah, see, I told you, you shouldn't have jumped to conclusion. All right, so, you know, it was there for a while, and it was a mistake. Does that mean there's not a racism problem?
Murray, what aggravates you the most?
I find it screwed up that what is now a good thing, it's not a hate crime. NASCAR had a phenomenal show of solidarity on Monday when they resumed the race, is perceived as that wasn't the narrative we were looking for by the usual suspects, your Jamel Hills, Deadspins, and far left-leaning sports media members. I think that they're upset that this wasn't true. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility, that people looked at this and were like, this wasn't the story we wanted. This was a juicier story if it was actually true. It's actually a good thing that it wasn't true.
Absolutely. So the woke left media is what aggravates you the most.
Yeah, and just that, and I wish that a lesson could be learned here in that it's okay to ask questions and to be a little bit of a skeptic initially and not rush to judgment. I think that that's okay, but I get it. We now live in a world that if you are a bit of a skeptic or you want to see proof, you're immediately labeled as a racist. And NASCAR, I would like to think maybe other corporations can learn from this. Like, maybe we should have done a more thorough investigation here initially. You know, it's good that it wasn't a hate crime. That's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I sort of get what happened now. I mean, like, I do. From 10,000 feet, you look at it and you say, you know, how could such a massive story have such a simple explanation? You know, something.
The hypersensitivity.
But I'll tell you on whose part.
Everyone's now. So I can understand why someone in his crew sees what is a pull, which was a hangman's noose. Even though it looked like it would hang a mouse, but you see that and you're like, that's a message being sent because everything's crazy. Everything now is crazy. So I can completely understand in the fog of war, for lack of a better term, someone sees that and says, someone's trying to send a message to the only black driver in NASCAR.
So I think the biggest overreaction and the most sensitive, you know, entity of this entire story was NASCAR. But I get their sensitivity. I mean, just again, the whole thing could have been easily explained away with about 15 minutes of work. I mean, really, you didn't need to call in the FBI and you didn't need to send out the statements that NASCAR sent out and the massive reaction, which was great, and the rallying around Bubba, like all of that, had such a simple explanation. So why didn't NASCAR just take that? And it's sort of obvious, right? NASCAR has finally decided way too late that their sport has too much of a racist element to it. And it's time to get with the times and to weed out that racist element. So they ban the Confederate flag and they make a stand finally after decades. And they do it as they're headed to Talladega, which is considered the most racist place on the circuit, according to the people that I've spoken to, or at least a cameraman who used to cover NASCAR, and it's been everywhere on the circuit. Talladega, deep Alabama,
yeah,
the worst.
Not okay. A good place.
So now, I mean, okay, so a whole confluence of things here, Murray. George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, protests, we're banning the Confederate flag, and now we're headed to Talladega. And our only black driver, his crew finds what they say is a noose in his garage. Now, NASCAR could have easily, dispatch their people down there, look at it, talk to people, and determine that, no, that's just a rope pulley for the garage door. But if NASCAR had come out with that conclusion, who's buying it? You know, if NASCAR comes out, oh, well, you're just covering up because you're...
Given their fan base, their history.
You're NASCAR. Yeah. We can't trust you. So NASCAR says, okay, you know what? Unacceptable. We are going to, when I say buy it, hook, line, and sinker, we are going to fully invest in that. We are not going to push back on this. We're going to call in the FBI. We're going to rally around Bubba, and we're not going to try and deny this in any way, shape, or form, because we're trying to turn over a new leaf, and this is Talladega. And, oh, by the way, we have the two-mile-long Confederate battle flag caravan outside the stadium and the plane flying overhead with the Confederate battle flag saying, defund NASCAR. And this is the whole atmosphere, right? So NASCAR doesn't want to take the other side. And so they say, okay, this is unacceptable. Let's call in the FBI. When they easily could have sent their guys down there and said, no, it's for the garage door. This has been here for over a year. But if they do that, no one, your Jameel Hills or, you know, the rest of people don't buy it.
Yeah.
And so they have to call in the neutral. So I can see why they overreacted. But to me, that was the biggest overreaction, because it wasn't NASCAR was the one that released the news. NASCAR was the one that released the statement. And I think they did it because to do anything else, I think they feared that they would be, you know, portrayed as being on that other side, and they're trying to evolve. They're trying to rid themselves of that. So I understand their overreaction.
Yeah, and they were right to bring in the big guns and thoroughly investigate this thing, because, you know, I see your point. Because if they were to come out, everyone would say, like, well, you're NASCAR. This
inside
is your
job. We don't trust you. Right.
And I can't help but being, well, and I'm taking a risk here saying this, but I don't care. I couldn't help but being a little annoyed last night that Bubba Wallace, like, doubled down with Don Lemon on CNN. It's like, well, okay, yes, it technically was a noose, but I felt like it's like, okay, is this now like a way to now pump yourself up a little bit? Are you going to try to? And Colin Kaepernick's message was ultimately the right message, and he was right to take a knee, and I don't disagree with that. But ultimately, I did think his message got co-opted, and he made a lot of money thanks to Nike. And I felt like what he did last night was a push to try to get some of that Nike money. I couldn't help but think that. But today, he puts out a message that it's like, oh, okay, well, where was this last night when you were in front of CNN's cameras? You know, I want to thank the team, NASCAR, and the FBI for acting swiftly and treating this as a real threat. I think we'll gladly take a little embarrassment over what the alternatives could have been. Like, I didn't hear any of that last night, and maybe he was just feeling hot at the time, but I don't know. I couldn't help think for a moment, and like, it's like, oh, this is, you're going to try to make this into a moment for you?
Well, he got blowback, probably, Murray. That's probably what changed, right? He got blowback. And so, you know, he said, all right, let me soften the message here a little bit, or soften the stance a little bit. And I don't disagree with your look. The extreme response on both ends, I guess, ultimately is what agitates me. But this idea that, like, well, see, so did they make it up? Did they make it up?
No, this isn't a Smollett thing. This is, I think it's, again, maybe it's not the right analogy, but like the fog of war term, like, you know, in the madness, people see things that might not be there, or they assume it's something else. And I think that's what this is, because of heightened sensitivities, how crazy everything has become. Someone saw what was technically a hangman's noose, but it was ultimately just a pull for the garage door.
To me, what I don't like is the finger pointing of, oh, yes. So do you think they did it on purpose and they made it up and it was a hoax? Well, no.
Well, you're never going to convince those people otherwise.
I mean, the coincidence, which is what it appears to be, is... it is uncanny. Again, just the timing of it. NASCAR finally tackling their racist reputation. Talladega, the most racist spot on the circuit, with the battle flags all over the place outside the stadium. And Bubba Wallace is in the one garage where there's the noose. The FBI looked at every garage at Talladega. That was the only garage stall that had the garage tie in the form of a noose. That's what I heard one ESPN reporter say this morning on the ESPN radio morning show. I didn't grab the sound, but I think he wrote it. I hope he did. He said he was going to. That the FBI looked at every garage at Talladega. That was the only garage stall where that tie down was in the form of a noose. And they say, okay, well, you know, is it possible that they specifically assigned Bubba Wallace to that garage so he would see it? And that, you know, that's nope. Those garages are assigned based on your point standings or your standing in NASCAR, and that's determined by the previous week's race. It's totally random. It's not totally random, but the fact that he was there was totally random because he ranked in a certain spot in the standings is why he got that garage. So, I mean, just think of that.
No, it was a perfect storm.
This week, that day, that stall, that driver. I mean, that is a hell of a coincidence.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of very 2020 is what it is.
I mean, right, of course it is. Of course. Brian Hoyer's your starting quarterback, and of course he drew the fourth garage with that tie down. All right, we'll pick that up on the other side. You'll hear Bubba Wallace on CNN last night, the cut that Murray was talking about, and we'll take your calls on this. And Brady, don't go anywhere.
Boston's home for sports. Zellner and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Did they say it?
I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Well, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger in Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Have you seen ropes like that hanging from garages? Is that typical?
Don, the image that I have and I have seen of what was hanging in my garage is not a garage pool. I've been racing all my life. We've raced out of hundreds of garages that never had garage pools like that. So people that want to call it a garage pool and put out old videos and photos of knots being as their evidence, go ahead. But from the evidence that we have, it's a straight up noose. The FBI has stated it was a noose over and over again. NASCAR leadership has stated that it was a noose. I can confirm that. I actually got evidence of what was hanging in my garage, over my car, around my picker guys, to confirm that it was a noose. And never seen anything like it. It's not something. I talked to my crew chief about it. I said, is this something like, I wanted to make sure we weren't jumping the gun. And I said, this isn't a knot. This isn't just a regular old what you call it. He's like, Bubba, this isn't something that can be done within a second of just tying a knot and being on the way. This is something that took time.
So what are you saying here? Are you saying that you don't believe, do you believe that it was intended for you in that way? Or are you, what are you saying here?
It was a noose. It was a noose that was whether tied in 2019 or whatever, it was a noose. So it wasn't directed at me, but somebody tied a noose. That's what I am saying. Mm-hmm. It is a noose.
So that's Bubba Wallace last night with CNN. So you didn't like that? You didn't like that interview?
No, well, when even Don Lemon isn't buying it, like, I don't know, man. Why are you leaning into this as hard as you are? Again, yes, technically it looked like a noose for a mouse, small little thing, and I can understand why someone looked at it. Like, they're trying to send a message, but I can't help, and I'm not going to apologize for it, I can't help but think, after watching that, like, what is this, dude? You trying to make an opportunistic push here to make more of this than it actually is? Why are you doubling down? And again, he just put out a statement a half hour ago. It's like, well, I heard this last night. If I heard this last night, yeah, dude, like, this is the right thing to say. It's been an emotional few days. First off, I want to say how relieved I am that the investigation revealed this wasn't what we feared it was. I want to thank my team, NASCAR, the FBI for acting swiftly and treating it as a real threat. I think we'll gladly take a little embarrassment over what the alternatives could have been. He goes on for a few more lines, but that's the meat of it. Gladly take a little embarrassment over what the alternatives could have been. Again, the good thing is this wasn't a hate crime, thankfully. It was just a giant misunderstanding. I don't think it's a big conspiracy or, you know, it's a hoax or anything like that. I don't think it's what, you know, Juicy Smollett did a few years ago. This was, I think it's the event because of the events that we're all living through and the heightened time that we're living through.
I do think, and I just did confirm that ESPN, Ryan McGee, said according to NASCAR, well, I guess this is according to NASCAR, every one of the pulldowns at Talladega was checked as part of the FBI investigation, and the only one of those fashioned into a noose was the rope in garage number 4, which was assigned to Richard Petty. But again, Richard Petty Motorsports number 43, Bubba Wallace's garage. But again, garage workspaces are assigned to teams per their rank in the NASCAR Cup Series standing. So just talk about a, like, of course, in 2020, in these times where every day is worse than the day before and it's never going to end, the one effing garage with the little mouse noose tied to the garage pole gets to Bubba Wallace, the one black driver on NASCAR, the one weekend, the Confederate flag rallies flying around the stadium. And, but you know, like, it's just, of course, it's so 2020 that that would happen at this time. But I why do you need to tie a noose into a rope pull down for a garage thing? Why wouldn't you just have a knob? Like, I don't get why you need a noose to pull down a garage.
You don't. Clearly, because none of the other ones had one. So, you know, again, it's going back to last October that it was there. So someone was in there one day messing around and made one. Now, why? Who knows? I mean, again, I'm not giving you any, I'm not telling you I have any ideas to what the motive was behind it. But someone, you know, it was left there for whatever reason. I have no idea. And he ended up in that spot. So, now look, I I'm not telling you that I like the reaction on either side, Murray. I'm sort of with you on that one. I you know, I feel like people are hypersensitive right now and everything is becoming a big deal. But I also, this was not a hoax. It's not like this was some sort of elaborate plan to evoke a response. At least I don't think it was. If we find evidence that suggests that it was, well, then I'll change my mind. But I don't believe that.
I mean, again, I think the biggest overreaction was NASCAR. And certainly Bubba Wallace's crew must have overreacted in the moment. Like, oh my God, what's that? You know, again, just the Confederate flag is flying over the stadium and there's a 2 mile long caravan of Confederate battle flags outside. And so they walk into the garage and there's a noose. And so they're like, oh my God. So like, I sort of get in the moment why they're so hypersensitive. NASCAR easily, with their investigators, could have easily come down and done exactly what the FBI did in 36 hours, which is, no, that's the garage tie down. This has been here for over a year. I think, in fact, they were tipped off to it by another racer or race crew that said, I actually was at Talladega last year or a couple months ago or whatever, and I thought I saw it. And that's how they sort of tracked it down. But I think NASCAR is hypersensitive to it too. They're trying to change their image and change the reality of what they are. And
well, let's not forget. I mean, how much time went by, you know, from them banning the Confederate flag, which has been an ongoing issue anyway. Okay, and then what types of response were they getting from people during that period of time? Was Bubba Wallace getting nasty emails or nasty letters? And was there hate mail? Were there any death threats? Was NASCAR getting any death threats from people out there?
Here's what I'd like to see. Honestly, would like to see. And Wallace said he saw the picture. So, like, why haven't we seen a picture of the actual noose and its placement where his crew found it? I've seen a bunch of pictures of what was allegedly there in October of 19. Or, you know, so people went back and looked at different camera shots that were taking over time of that garage pull down, sort of at the corner of the garage, on the side of the garage, right? The little thing that we see there on the side.
Yeah, with some random internet sleuth.
Is that exactly how they saw it? Or was it somewhere else? Was it placed differently? How was it placed? I just want to see it. And I'm stunned we didn't see it to begin with. And I think, I don't know, the visual would help. The visual would help to see just how much of an overreaction it is, how sensitive they were, or was it, you know, like, I don't know, would it just help to see exactly what it was, where it was, how it laid, the whole thing?
Sure.
Like, why can't you just show that picture? And that sort of, like, I should have said it at the time, but I felt it at the time. It's like, well, don't just tell me you found this and then moved it or what. Like, take a picture of it. Everything. You take a picture of everything nowadays. You can't fart in the wind without someone pulling out their camera phone and taking a picture of it, for crying out loud. Take a picture of it. So that, don't tell me there's not a picture of what the Wallace crew found.
Maybe you understand by asking for that, Mike. Many people would want to paint you as a bad guy and the worst label possible, a racist, for just wanting to see that.
Well, like, I'm not. I just
no,
want
I know.
To see
it. I know. It's crazy.
I just want to see what it was. I just want to see what they saw.
Yeah. No, me too. Because initially, like, you hear it. And again, I took this at face value, given the area, the racetrack, that hillbilly fan base. I was like, yeah, no, this happened. I said that Monday. And I assumed, like, in my picture in my head, I'm like, what? Was there, like, a big one thrown on the hood of his car? Like, that's what I thought it was.
Right. Right, exactly. So what did they see? And if it was placed differently than on the side there, sort of next to the track where the, and I say the track where the garage door goes up and down,
right, yeah, yeah.
If it was somewhere else or laying somewhere, or, you know, I don't know. I just want to see what they saw to fill out the story. And so I don't know why they just don't show us that. But anyway, okay, so there's the follow-up on the Bubba Wallace thing. I started off with just a little aggravation. I don't want to hear about Jason Tatum's golf game. I don't want to hear about Jason Tatum's golf game. I want to hear about his basketball game. And I see Jason Tatum, again, according to The Athletic, working his ass off at Core Golf and the practice facility and the driving range there in Natick, working his ass off when he went months without being able to find a rim or touch a basketball. That kind of bugs me. Meanwhile, you know whose golf game has gone to crap? Brady, because he's obsessed with his sport. I wish Tatum was obsessed. I wish Tuukka Rask was as obsessed. I wish all these guys were as obsessed as Brady is getting back to his sport. So that's how we led. We'll take your calls on both of them, I promise, after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.